should have rights equal to those of human beings.
We care about humans, and we're using these animals in the best possible way to try to make medical advances.
Tonight on Third Thursday, Animal Rights, Whose Life Matters? A look at the controversy over the use of animals for medical research. It is an issue that has become so heated, some people will use virtually any means to protect and save animals. We are live tonight at the University of San Diego at the University Center for a town hall meeting to explore the controversial issue of the use of animals in medical research. Nearly 400 people have joined us tonight, along with a panel of experts on the subject. And you at home will have a chance to call in your questions right here on Third Thursday. I'm Marty Levine. Let me start right off the bat and introduce our panel members to you. Those of you who are at home, will be giving you the phone number in a few minutes so that you can also phone in your questions tonight. First, Dr. Roger Breslau, San Diego Director for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Next to Dr. Breslau is Sally Mackler, the Director of San Diego Animal Advocates. Next is Cleveland Amory, who is the founder and the president of the Fund for Animals. Dr. Stuart Zola Morgan is the chairman of the Animal Research Committee at the University of California at San Diego. Steve Carroll is the executive director of the Incurably Ill for Animal Research. And next to Steve is Dr. William Renner, the president-elect of the San Diego County Medical Society. We'll talk to the panel in a moment. You at home will have an opportunity to phone in your questions as well as members of our audience. We'd like you to meet two people that we hope will help set the tone for the program. The first is Jane Cartmill, if you'd be kind enough to stand up. You worked in the medical field, but now you are opposed to any use of animals in medical research?
That's right, I am, because I know the difference between animal research and medical progress. They're not the same thing. I work with patients every day, and my mother has cancer, my brother has diabetes, and I'd like to see medical progress help them, but I know that laboratory animal experiments do not translate into healthcare. For example, at UCSD, there's a $200,000 grant to study to drain blood from the fetuses of pregnant sheep, while in San Diego we have a critical lack of prenatal care for pregnant women.
Okay. You're talking now about priorities, where we spend the money, because obviously the doctor's going to argue that there's some value in that. Let me ask you one more question. Has there been in the past any information that has come from animal research that has helped? Because you mentioned diabetes, one of the cases often cited by the researchers in the medical profession is that without animal research, we would not have perfected the insulin treatment to the degree that we have.
Fully 90% of diabetes, according to the American Diabetes Association, is preventable. And I think it is a travesty that we're not allocating our funds away from animal experiments and into programs of prevention.
Okay. But if all animal research stopped today, you are confident that medical progress would be made at the same pace as if animals were to continue to be used?
Absolutely. Just because animals have been used in the past does not mean that that's the best way to accomplish things. It's not the only way. And certainly that kind of thinking would have kept us in the dark ages.
Okay, thank you. Let me introduce you now to Steve Gardella. We have, as usual, a divided audience. You work in research. You work at UCSD. And what is your story?
My story is that when my daughter was 1 year old, she contracted spinal meningitis. And she was nearly dead in my arms when I had brought her to the hospital. Once she was diagnosed and they were able to prescribe the proper drugs, and those drugs that they prescribed were developed and tested on animals.
I mean, you feel that without that testing, without the animals, you would have lost your daughter?
Exactly. If it wasn't for those animals saved my daughter's life, the drugs that were tested and developed by using animals in research.
And are you comfortable that the work that you are doing now, that the experiments of which you are a part, are contributing to medical progress, or would you agree with Ms. Cartmill that we could stop it all now and we would not lose anything in the forward movement of medicine?
I disagree with her 100%. I am fully confident of what we're doing is for the betterment of mankind.
Okay. Steve, thank you very much. Well, you have a sense now of what the issue is. The controversy over the use of animals in research is one of extreme interest locally. I should say that we are at the University of San Diego because there is a minimal amount of research done here, but there is a good deal of animal research that is done in San Diego and La Jolla and numerous research facilities. First, before we talk to the panel, a background report on animal rights versus medical research. A delicate open-heart surgery procedure is being performed here at the Veterans Administration Hospital in La Jolla. What is unusual is that the patient is a pig.
We have to have a heart that's physically large enough that we can make all the measurements we need, get all the instruments in. It's also the least socially valuable animal. We use dogs as little as possible because we don't like to use dogs in our experiments.
Dr. Robert Engler is a UCSD cardiologist. He has worked on animals for more than a decade researching heart disease. Engler says white blood cells actually cause damage during a heart attack. He is trying, through this research, to find a way to minimize or eliminate that damage.
There's no other way to find out this information, no. If we could do it with a computer model, we would, but you can't. No one had any measurements, so we'd have no data to put into the computer.
The researchers are lying! The animals are dying!
For staunch animal rights activists, this is an issue with virtually no middle ground. They want to see the outright ban of animals in biomedical research. That stand has led to many recent protests throughout the nation, including rallies here in San Diego and on the steps of the state capitol just last month.
Cowardice is civic sectors hiding behind locked doors in their basement fortresses. But courage is anti-vivisectionists who risk jail to break into the laboratories to rescue helpless, traumatized animals.
Well, the volume has increased recently. The issue of animal rights is not new. Humane societies were founded in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, in part to look after the welfare of laboratory animals, also in part because research had greatly increased. Donald Barnes is a former medical researcher who now heads the National Anti-Vivisection Society.
We are asking for an attitude change. We're asking for people not to say, well, it's no big deal, they're just mice and rats. We're asking for people to say, there's pain and suffering there, because that's the real question. There's pain and suffering and death. Do we have the right to inflict that on other beings? Don't think so.
Well, Barnes is working through the system to bring about change. Others have resorted to far more extreme measures. The principal example is the Animal Liberation Front, which has illegally freed many animals from medical facilities. The new push for animal rights has created a counter-effort by people who benefit most directly, the victims of incurable disease.
The fact that they developed insulin using, you know, dogs from the pound has saved my life. I wouldn't be here talking to you today after 4 years of having this if I hadn't been taking insulin every day.
Sharon Harlow is a diabetic who heads the local chapter of the Incurably Ill for Animal Research. She and others have been speaking out in recent months about their strong feelings for animal research.
The vaccine could be considered 80% to 90% effective against paralytic poliomyelitis.
The polio vaccine, developed in 1955 by Dr. Jonas Salk, was also the result of research on animals. It put an end to the dread disease that had been killing 30,000 people a year. A total of 57 Nobel Prizes for Physiology and Medicine have been awarded for research done since 1901 with animals. Nevertheless, despite many medical advances through the use of animals, opponents maintain there are far better, newer ways of conducting research. All in all, it remains a very emotional issue.
I think it's up to mankind to stand up and speak on behalf of these creatures who are innocent and have done no wrong, yet we're doing horrible wrong to them.
This is Dr. Engler, whose lab we visited in the beginning of that story. Are you guessing, I don't want to go too far into detail on the research because it gets a little bit obscure. Are you guessing that white blood cells cause problems during heart attacks, or that's something you already know?
We started with test tube experiments and computer models, and that predicted that they would. But to be certain, we had to do some experiments in the model to get real data to confirm the computer models. And now we have that data.
Okay. And if everything works out, if you are able to do what you hope to be able to do, which is inhibit the white blood cells, what is apt to be the result?
Well, we already have the first of, I hope, many drugs that will be very useful in heart attack to do that in clinical trials in man.
Okay. Now, would you object to using another system? Would you object to a computer model if you could do it? You're maintaining you can't do it, right?
We use those as much as we can. It's most efficient. We can make more progress faster if we can use computer models and test tube experiments. We go to physiology experiments in animals when we have to have that kind of data to be sure it's safe to take something into man.
Okay. Let's make it clear. The pig does not recover from the surgery.
That's correct.
even wake up?
Never.
You anesthetize the animal as if it was a veterinary procedure, take the measurements, that's it for the pig.
That's right. We want to separate two issues here. One is animal research and humane treatment. This is humane treatment. The animal's under general anesthesia and never recovers. It experiences no pain and no suffering. The information that's gained is extremely valuable. I have a question. There are 15 million animals senselessly put to death in pounds every year in the United States. Why can't we, in a humane way, make those deaths have some purpose, some meaning, by advancing the care of not only man, but farm animals and pests as well?
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Who would like to volunteer, Mr. Amory?
Well, having lived through a long period of the animal research controversy, the first one laboratory I ever visited said, "Do your best. You never can tell when some anti-vivisectionist will come around." I've seen us accused of all kinds of emotionalism, and now I see the doctors bringing a child that wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for the wonderful things, and I've seen emotion turn the other way. That good doctor that just spoke now, speaking about let's take the animals from the pounds and instead of putting them down, let's have them have this wonderful research and this extraordinary care that he seems to give all his animals. If he does, he's one in a million. The point is very simply that 50 counties in this state of California have already banned the seizing of dogs for pounds. The animals go under excruciating experiments all over. They are so absurd, some of them. You bring up the question of terrorism, for example, and breaking in. Why do you think, Marty, people break in? They don't break in because, you know, they want to destroy something. They break in because an insider has given word that there is something going on that is so frightful and so awful that they've got to get those kittens out of there. I'm saying kittens because the latest one was the University of Oregon, where they were taking kittens, rotating their eyeballs, and seeing how high they could fall.
Let me clarify something, because I want to understand. This whole issue of animal rights covers a very broad subject. We were asking specifically about the procedure that Dr. Engler is doing, and you said because some of the procedures are so horrible, often it is cited studies that do on their face look horrible. I wonder if anyone would address themselves specifically to this case, because I'd like to better understand it. Do you object to the use of the pig in this specific kind of
process? You've got to put the pig down, but notice how they always talk heart trouble, they talk cancer, they don't talk about oven cleaners, they don't talk about, you know, Dre's test. They don't talk about hair dyes under their quote. These men beside me are reasonable men, but under their cloak of being judge and jury of every damn thing that's done in a laboratory, and I say damn on purpose, that they are responsible because they won't go one inch. They talk about humane treatment. I'm talking about humane experiments or even pointful experiments that aren't done to get the damn money.
Okay, I'm still... go ahead, Dr. Zoldemorgan. Go ahead and answer us. I'm still confused because I'm still hearing two messages. I heard from Ms. Cartmill, no animals at all in medical research, and you're making a differentiation. But let me let Dr. Zoldemorgan respond, and then we'll go back to it.
Let me just try and again separate out one of the issues here. Mr. Amory's talking about product safety testing. Now, consumers demand that the products they buy are safe, and in part that requires animal testing. But that's not the issue here. The issue here is the use of animals in biomedical research. That's a very different issue. And the notion that Mr. Amory suggests that Dr. Engler is one in a million, for instance, because his animals do not suffer, is an absurd notion. We have an incredible amount of regulation and requirements that ensure the welfare of animals. The bottom line here is that we are trying to deliver health care and benefits to our patients. And we believe and have shown that can be done while at the same time ensuring the welfare of animals.
Sir,
we are regulated.
I'm going to give you a chance.
Very, very quickly. One sentence.
Okay. They did not one damn thing to improve this humanity. This went because the Dole bill was passed, the Dole-Brown bill.
Okay.
Now they don't even put on their panels somebody that by law decreed that we appeal to. Half the time, it's a doc who's doing the most awful things you can imagine.
We'll get back to it, I promise. Let me give you the phone number at home if you'd like to call in a question. 570-1339. 570-1339. Phone lines are open right now. We'll be back at USD after this break. We're back live at USD. We were talking about the use of animals in research. Dr. Breslau, let me ask you, and let me explain the group that you're with. You are the San Diego director of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Can you clarify this issue for me? I want to understand if we can even establish ground rules, because we've gone from there should be no animals used whatsoever to a sense that maybe some experiments are A, worthwhile, and B, humane, to not worthwhile and totally inhumane. Can you help me sort it out?
Yes, Marty. First, I'd like to clarify what the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine represents. Up until very recently, there have been few credentialed people that were willing to speak out about their own personal beliefs regarding the inhumanity of some experiments being performed in laboratories. Today, there is a group headquartered in Washington, D.C., which consists of 2,000-plus physicians and 16,000-plus associate members, many of whom are tenured academics and many of whom are academic chairpersons of universities. The position of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is that research will not stop, research should not stop, responsible research should go on, and that every possible means for providing alternative methods to animal research should be sought for and explored. We don't expect animal research to cease tomorrow. Animal research may not cease in my lifetime. But eventually, the day will come when the use of animals in biomedical research will have become a historical fact. I'd like to address Dr. Zola Morgan's subject about the strict regulation of medical research, because it has direct pertinence to the clip that we just saw. The belief on the part of the lay public and legislators that there is protection afforded laboratory animals is a fond supposition, and let me assure the audience that that's all it is. The Federal Animal Welfare Act was passed in 1966. The Department of Agriculture was assigned the responsibility of enforcing that act. This is pertinent, Marty. The Department of Agriculture, in order to simplify its task, reclassified the types of animals that they would render supervision over. Cats and dogs are animals under this act. Rats and mice are not. Monkeys are animals under this act. Pigs are not. Laboratory research on pigs is not regulated by any law of this land or of this state.
Okay, let Dr. Zola Morgan answer. Then I got to get my question answered, because I feel like I'm starting a program here. I don't know where we're coming from. Go ahead.
In point of fact, there are regulations involving all species. That is, the species that are not covered by some of the federal acts are then covered through the U.S. Public Health Service Animal Welfare Policy, which mandates a committee to review all animal research, every species that is used in research. And those committees that are standing at every institute that receives federal funds look at every aspect of every
research. Okay, wait. Time, please. Sally, could you help me understand this? Is there a difference between worthwhile research and an animal treated in a humane way and the other, or is it all should be abolished? I need to understand where we're starting from.
The nomenclature, or to even say that research is humane, is a contradiction in terms. There is no humane way of inducing a heart attack in a pig, a dog, a cat, or a rat. There is no humane way of bashing heads of baboons to look at trauma in humans. And furthermore, the real issue here is not, can this research be conducted humanely? The question that we need to address is animal research the appropriate way to look into medical progress and public health? And I, for one, do not believe that that is so. Right here in San Diego, we have not only a prenatal care crisis, but we have a mental health crisis.
We have a number of health care crises in this county. And UCSD receives a tremendous amount of money, for instance, to do drug abuse studies, which involve the dipping of drunk, hairless mice in PCP. This has absolutely no relationship to the drug abuse problem, nor does it help a person with an abuse problem seek help. There are approximately 200,000 people with severe addiction problems in this county that are unable to get into a rehabilitation center. And I have a problem with that. I don't think that animal research addresses that
problem. But in the case of the experiment that we looked at,
mm-hmm.
in your opinion, needless, inhumane, should not be done, no funds should be spent on it.
No, I don't think so, because epidemiological studies and clinical studies have shown us that heart disease is for the most part preventable. And when I say preventable, I'm talking 80% to 90% preventable. Medical intervention does not begin to have 80% to 90% prevention.
Okay, let me ask Dr. Renner to respond to what you just heard.
Well, I think she makes a good point initially when she says that there is a crisis in medicine in San Diego and all across the country. There are medically indigent people that don't have access to care. There's a prenatal problem with getting pregnant women to a doctor. There's a crisis, and I think the medical community is dealing with that. However, to assume that we could take the funds that are allocated to research and allocate them to that issue is really not possible. If we were to completely eliminate animals for research, I think you'd be looking at a crisis in medicine that would be absolutely insurmountable. You would be dealing with people with illnesses, whether you want to talk about worsening diabetes, you want to talk about cystic fibrosis, acute leukemia. I can go on and on and on and tell you that the amount of sick people that we would have to care for would be absolutely ridiculous compared to what we're dealing with now.
Would you agree? I'm going to take a phone call question, but would you agree with the statement that in the past there have been abuses, there have been research projects done where animals suffered needlessly and in a very terrible way for at best a dubious result?
Well, I would have to say as far as a dubious result, I can't make that evaluation, Marty, because I don't know the research project. As far as the...
Well, I'll give you a reason. Let me give you one.
Let me just say, Marty.
Very quickly, I'm going to take a phone call.
We as researchers are just as appalled at those kinds of situations as is anyone. We have the same kind of concerns about animal welfare, and we find among our own colleagues on the cases when that does occur, we are just as appalled by that and do not want
to... Can we ask him to name somebody?
Yeah,
I want to name somebody that you threw out of the medical fraternity for what he did. Just give me one name out of all the millions.
Okay, let me go. I'm going to take a telephone. Okay, I'm going to take a question now from on the telephone. Are you there?
Yes.
Tell us your name and give us your question, or just give us your question.
Okay, my name is Gene. This is for Mr. Emery, and I'd just like to ask one very pointed question. Mr. Emery, are you saying, and do you believe, that if a member of your family was dying, would you let them because of research that could have saved their life on animals, or a drug that could have been used in animal research that could have been protected? Is that what you're saying?
Are you talking about my cat, polar bear?
No, I'm talking about maybe your fine son or a good daughter or your lovely wife.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
I'm not being ridiculous.
Don't try to paint us in a corner. We're not in the corner. They're in the corner. They say, do we want to stop everything? And we all know that it's not going to stop overnight. We're trying to get some decency and kindness into a rotten field for many years.
Okay, I've got a question. Tell me your name.
My name's Dr. Mitchell Malachowski. I'm a research scientist. I'd like to ask a two-part question for Steve Carroll since he hasn't had a chance to speak yet. I'd like to say first, I think all creatures have the right to live. And so I'd like to ask you, what gives you the right to decide who should live and die, which is basically what the decision you're making to use animals? And secondly, very crudely, and this is not a personal, why should we not use terminally ill people then, using the logic here to test?
Okay, I'd like to address the last part of that question first. To begin with, there are people with terminal illnesses, there are people with incurable illnesses that are used in research. Research is a multidisciplined profession. It is not all done on animals. They use computers, they use cell cultures, they study human beings, they study past medical records. These are all gears that mesh together into a machinery that works to develop cures and treatments. And we need all of those gears for it to work. And we cannot take away any of those without the machinery definitely suffering.
And the first part of the question, the decision, and who should make the decision of who lives and dies.
Well, I think
that, that's the type of philosophical question we could do the whole hour and a half on.
Yes, very definitely. And I think our whole world centers around not just mankind, but also animals, that you're preserving yourself, your own family, your own species is top priority for everybody. And
Dr. Sam Pappas, UC San Diego. The gentleman left us with the impression that terrorists strike only when there is an abuse of animals. A couple of years back, many of the mice were stolen from UCSD and left in Marriott Hotel escalator. They were my mice, and I used only dead animals and cells from these animals. How do you justify?
I don't know what he's talking about.
Some mice that were stolen from UCSD and left where? On an escalator?
In a hotel, in the local hotel. And these were mice that were not meant for any experiment. They were used only to collect cells. How do you justify? These are not abused animals.
I think they were better off in the hotel. What kind of a hotel was it?
Marty, could I comment on that?
Sure.
Comment on that? I'm aware of what he is talking of, and it was found that that was a prank done by a fraternity. It had nothing to do with animal rights movement whatsoever. Those mice were killed in an elevator in a hotel, and they had been stolen from the university several weeks before. It had absolutely nothing to do with the animal rights movement.
Okay, let me go back to telephone. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. Ask your question, please.
Okay. I was kind of wondering, what do you think the experience and knowledge gained from animal research and surgeon practitioners working on animals, how can you relate that to having someone work on a child, anyone else in your family? Can you say that that research is absolutely worthless?
I don't understand your question entirely.
Well,
go ahead. Try one more time.
Well, meaning the things that are learned from animals,
yes.
How can they just go ahead and do that on people and with no practical knowledge on what's happening?
This is a very old issue that the medical profession does research on animals, that the application then goes to people and like thalidomide, we have horrible, horrible results.
I think I can address
Dr. Breslau do it first.
All right, we can take the baby fay fiasco as an example. People might look at that and say, that was an example of experimenting on human children. In actuality, it was a case of failed experimentation in animals that was then translated into the human sphere.
We're talking about the Loma Linda surgery where they put the baboon part in the back.
That is correct. Dr. Leonard Bailey had performed over 160 cross-species transplants. That's over 320 animals, none of which were successful. There was no scientific basis to believe that the experience could be transferred to human surgery with any degree of success, and Dr. Bailey then went ahead and proved that to the dismay of the world.
Okay, let me ask Dr. Sullivan Morgan, you posed a very good question.
Yes.
You do tons and tons of research on animal models, we take it to the human population, and we have horrible, horrible results.
Well, I think that's not the right characterization at all. Well, one characterization is, for instance, in Dr. Engler's work, or we can point to cardiac bypass surgery, the surgery that prolonged... Are there not failures
yes.
in the process of science? Are you asking are there failures in the process?
No, I think we're sort of evading the issue here in a way. There are techniques, medications, that seem to prove themselves in a laboratory on animals. We take them into the human population. And somebody thought thalidomide was a safe drug, and it presumably had been tested.
Well, let me talk about the thalidomide issue, because in point of fact, the reason that we did not have that catastrophe here in the United States is because the people here in the U.S., in the Food and Drug Administration, paid attention to the animal research that was available at the time. In Europe, that research was ignored. But here, really, single-handedly, a woman whose job it was to license these incoming drugs was a researcher herself and was familiar with the malforming effects of these kinds of drugs and did not permit that drug to be licensed here.
But you'll have to agree that there are instances where these medications have gone to human use and we've had terrible results. Let me see if I can...
You'll never agree. You won't get a yes.
Yes, I will.
No, you won't. You're going to be here all day. All right.
Dr. Rennert, have there been?
Yes, I'm sure there... You know, nothing is 100%. And I would have to say that research is done with anticipation of improving the quality of life, the quality of care. And that's what we attempt to do. And we always... You do experiments, and you try and get the results, and you look at the results, and if they're good, you go on with it. But nothing is 100%. But I want to tell you, when you look at at children 20 years ago, acute leukemia in infants and children was a deadly disease. The mortality was 100%. Now it's a curable disease. And the reason it's a curable disease is because we took those drugs, chemotherapeutic oncological agents, and used them on animals first to find out whether or not they were going to have a lethal effect. And if after the research was done and the data was collected, the drugs that were found to be effective were then used on children, and we have a curable disease. And we could go on.
We also have an audience with a lot of questions. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and your questions are next. As I'm sure you've already sensed tonight, for animal rights activists, this is a cause of great concern. Tim Carr reports now that this group is determined to make people aware of what they feel are numerous injustices.
Sunday, April 30th, hundreds of animal rights activists invade the campus of UCSD.
If it is fanatical to demand an end to the infliction of suffering on animals, regardless of where that takes place, then call me a fanatic.
It came from across the state, people who say using animals for research is wrong. Jane Cartmill was among them.
The tragedy of animal research is that even if it were producing treatments and cures on a daily basis that were really making a difference, life-saving miracles, the ones we hear referred to but never spelled out, even if it were doing that, it would still be ethically wrong.
This day was dedicated to bringing that message to the public in hopes that if the activities of those in the laboratories are revealed, the public will call for a stop to it. This march was relatively peaceful, without incident. But that hasn't always been the case. Witness early April at the University of Arizona in Tucson. The Animal Liberation Front, better known as ALF, broke into labs on the campus, taking several animals out, including some mice that had been infected with a disease contagious to humans.
The people who have taken these animals themselves obviously are at risk to infection. Should they acquire the infection, there's a chance that they might pass this infection along to others.
The liberators also set fire in the building, leaving their signature behind. 1985, UC Riverside. The ALF broke in to liberate dogs, cats, mice, and other experimental animals.
Not all animal rights activists are radicals who go around blowing up buildings and releasing disease on the public. For the most part, they're everyday people. But those people do support much of the activity of the Animal Liberation Front.
I'm enraged when I hear people say the Animal Liberation Front are terrorists. They're not terrorists. The terrorists are the people in the labs doing what they do.
Jane Cartmill has been in the animal rights movement for 10 years. She's a member of a local animal advocates group, and though she has never participated in an ALF activity, she says what ALF does is good for the cause.
I don't condone violence in general, but I have noted that it's a hallmark of the Animal Liberation Front that no one has ever been injured. And I'm sure that is very much by design.
Cardinal says civil disobedience seems to be what it takes to make the change they need. She says she's willing to go to jail for the cause. Like many of those who mourn the deaths of animals in laboratories through symbolic funerals like this one, Cartmill sees a light at the end of the tunnel.
I think we are going to be the catalyst that forces society to open its eyes. People are basically not unkind. People are basically pretty good at heart. They would not condone if they knew what was going on.
Okay, your name.
My name's Chris Waller. I'm a board member of San Diego Animal Advocates, and I have a statement, a couple of parts. Firstly, the research movement likes to characterize people who are against animal research as also being against humanity. I've been an animal rights activist for 5 years. I've been a worker with the mentally retarded in group homes and in educational settings for 10. I've seen what happens to these people when the health care funds are cut. I've seen people having to wait 2 years to even go to the dentist. I'd like Sally Mackler to talk to us about what Dr. Zola Morga does so we can hear about it from Sally. And also about inspections at UCSD and what they're like, because Dr. Zola Morgan...
Well, let's ask. Okay. Let me. Can I ask Dr. Zola Morgan first what he does, and then... All right, Sally, you tell me what you think Dr. Zola Morgan does, and we'll let Dr. Zola Morgan say what he thinks he does, okay?
Fine.
Dr. Zola Morgan damages parts of the brains of sentient and extremely social animals in an attempt to induce the same symptoms that human amnesiacs suffer from. That's what I think Dr. Zola Morgan does. He already knows what the symptoms are in human amnesiacs, and I want to really reiterate the fact that this is simply a replication of the symptom of amnesia. It has nothing to do with the cause of amnesia, nor does he attempt to cure the amnesia. He simply attempts to reproduce the symptoms of amnesia in his monkey.
Okay, is that what you do, Doctor?
We need now to separate the fact from the fiction here. What I do is to try and understand what are the structures in the brain that are responsible for memory. That is, what are the structures of the brain in human patients which are damaged and which produce memory impairment. We are at a reasonably primitive level in our understanding, and we can't yet identify precisely what the structures are that are damaged in patients who have memory problems.
How do you do this?
Let me just say that memory problems is a very prevalent, memory deficits are a very prevalent impairment that is linked to many kinds of diseases, including encephalitis, stroke, Alzheimer's disease. And we are trying to understand what are the brain structures that are damaged, how those structures work, and how we ultimately might be able to prevent that.
How do you do that?
We do that in several ways. We study patients with the...
Well, let's talk about the animals, because that's the issue on the table.
And we do use what are called animal models, in which we neurosurgically remove a portion of the brain that we believe is responsible for processing memory. We then evaluate the effects of that damage over a long period of time to determine whether we can produce a memory impairment in the animals that is like the impairment we see in
So you remove part of the animal's brain.
That's correct.
And the animal after that, what happens to the animal after the evaluation?
The animal then is followed for a period of about 2 years and is evaluated on tests of learning and memory. Now, the neurosurgery we perform, by the way, is identical to the surgery that would be performed in a clinical setting.
But we do, which I'm sure is part of the issue for Sally, end up with a brain-damaged animal for 2 years.
Yes, we do.
And then, Marty, also that animal is also put to death. We have to understand that the animal...
After two years, the animal's life, we need to evaluate the damage. Okay.
Now, these are studies that are leading to our understanding of what the structures are that are damaged.
I understand that part. Let me go back to the phone and get a question. I'll go back to the audience here while we're doing that. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead.
Yeah. My name is Sue, and I have a question for anyone on the panel. I'm wondering if there are cases of experiments being done around the country studying the same thing. In other words, numerous experiments to study the same exact thing. And why can't these research centers just do the study one time and share the data with each other?
Is this being duplicated all over the country?
Well, let me say that the research funds for doing research are at such a premium that it's very hard to find duplication around the country. Now, there are two kinds of duplication
that we need to talk about.
There are two kinds of
duplication. Doctor, please. You're saying that there's not enough money, they don't agree. We're probably not going to sell it. But
let me talk about two kinds of duplication.
Quickly,
one is
please.
What's called inadvertent duplication, where there may be some other lab that's doing a similar kind of work. The other is intentional duplication. That is, we want to replicate certain findings so that we know that that's a real phenomenon.
Exactly what's going on with cold fusion now, which is certainly out of this realm. Tell me your name.
Hi, I'm Melanie Hodge. I'm the president of Students Against Animal Cruelty at Helix High School. I'd like to address... Thank you. I'd like to address this actually to all of you, not to Sally and the other gentleman next to her and the people for animal rights. But it goes back to what you were talking about, heart disease. I'm not a fanatic on health or anything, but I do know that heart disease is caused mainly by eating too much fats, by eating too much cholesterol. It's your fault that you are eating all this stuff. You know, it's your health. Why should these animals, you know, these dogs and cats, why should they go through all this trauma? Because what we are doing to ourselves, we do this.
This question doesn't come as a surprise to any of you on the panel. If our eating habits were different, maybe we wouldn't have the problem. We wouldn't need to do the research. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Marty. There's no question that preventive medicine is going to play a bigger and bigger role in the quality of life for all of us. And Melanie, that was a very good question. But let me tell you that the way we found out that fats and those kind of terrible foods have a detrimental effect on our hearts is by some animal experiments that we've done in the past to learn what was done, what effect they had on the coronary arteries and the heart.
Wait. Time.
We've got to answer that. I mean, we can't let them get away with nonsense. Okay. Roger, answer it.
Dr. Renners knows well that...
Wait, Melanie, please. Just for a second. Wait. Time. Go ahead, doctor.
Dr. Renner knows well that the most significant accumulation of data regarding cardiovascular disease came from the Framingham study, which is a study of human lifestyles and the progression of disease in humans. It's humans that get these diseases. It's humans that should be studied.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back live. Go ahead. Tell me your name.
Brett Melton, and I'm just here as a proud parent of a son that's had a transplant by Dr. Bailey. The main thing, he was born with congenital defect, multi-defects of his heart. He went through all the normal surgeries, and it came down to the easiest surgery was a heart transplant. There are 1,500 babies born every year of needing a heart transplant. And one of the surgery or the research being done is that cross-species transplantation, but that's because there aren't enough donors available to have enough hearts for these babies. And if there were, we wouldn't need to be doing research in the first place. But, you know, we do need it.
Dr. Breslau, do you disagree that some people will have heart disease through no fault of their own and nothing that they might be able to change in their diet?
That's undoubtedly correct, and there's been some beneficial fallout in historic time from some of the procedures that have been done. The cross-species transplants that we were talking about that failed and led to the baby Fay fiasco were transplants done in sheep, in calves, in goats, which have no relevance whatsoever to a baboon versus human transplant. Okay. They're not relevant.
Let me introduce you to Marianne Melvin, because in this county, as we mentioned at the top of the program, some dogs and cats that find their way to UCSD come from the pound. And what you want to see, is that stopped?
Yes. I'm the director of STOP, Stop Taking Our Pets. And I want to point out that San Diego is one of four counties out of 58 in the state of California that still sells pets to their one customer, which is UCSD. I want to make it very clear that the humane societies do not do this. It is only San Diego County Animal Control.
How do you respond to the argument that the animal that would be kept at animal control and then destroyed there serves a greater purpose if that animal is then sold to a research project? How do you respond?
Well, I would just answer that by saying that if your dog were lost and you could not get to it in time, and this does happen because dogs can travel great distances and people can't get to them or find them, and if your dog, you had the choice of this dog being humanely euthanized or ending up on a torturous research project, which would you choose for your animal? I want to make it very clear that we feel this is a corruption of the shelter system, that this is not why shelters were set up, that people lose their trust in shelters.
I'm going to let Dr. Zola Morgan respond. The last time that you tried to get the Board of Supervisors to stop this was last year, right? July or August of 1988? And no, I'm just saying the last time that it really went before them? When was the last time?
We have not been before the Board of Supervisors. There's been a contract for 22 years in San Diego. There has been one hearing in 1981, and that's because animal rights people brought the hearing. We do not have any public hearing on the matter of this contract.
Dr. Zola Morgan, we'll respond to this specific one, then Sawyer or Sally. Go ahead.
Let's again separate the fact from the fiction here. The reality is that the only dogs that are used at the university are the only animals from the pound that are used by the university are animals that have not been claimed by their owner, who have not been adopted, and who are scheduled to be euthanized at the pound. These are dogs who are scheduled to die at the pound. The university then obtains a small number of the total number of animals that are killed each year at the pound, and those animals are used in, for the most part, what are called acute experiments. That is, they are anesthetized, a procedure is done on them, the animals never recover, they suffer no pain and discomfort during that procedure.
Thanks, Alan.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment, and that is that First of all, we don't know if these animals are going to die anyway, because the animals in San Diego County Department of Animal Control are not placed in adoption pens, and they do not have the opportunity or the option of getting adopted before they are used by UCSD.
Isn't the pound, let me just for clarification, isn't Animal Control saying, we try to identify those animals we think will be have a better chance of being, they're overwhelmed with the numbers. I mean, I have to take, they say, we think this dog can be adopted, so they put it in a pen where people will see it. You're absolutely right. Some are separated out, but isn't somebody trying to make that judgment?
No,
it's not random.
No, the pound is there for the animals. The pound is supported by tax dollars for the animals. The pound is supported by tax dollars for owners of the animals. The animals should certainly be allowed and available for adoption before, first of all, they are offered to the research community. And secondly, the pound is there for the protection of the animals. And if we want to take the utilitarian attitude that because these animals can help people, they should be used, well, I think then you would see these animals being used, or you might see these animals being used for their fur. You might see these animals being used to feed people. It is the same
issue. There's an interesting clamor of people out there somewhere wondering where all the efforts are for spay and neuter programs. I'll be right back to the panel, Doctor, I promise. We've talked about the use of animals to try to develop cures for disease. We want to talk about one specific case. It involves a major killer. Tim Carr reports on a La Jolla scientist who says he's making advancements trying to find a cure for AIDS.
This is no ordinary mouse. It could lead to a breakthrough in solving the plague of the latter part of the 20th century, AIDS. Researchers have injected a human immune system into the animal. That means they will be able to introduce the AIDS virus into the mouse and look for ways to treat it. It may sound like just another scientific achievement, but it could save the life of Richard Stone. Stone has AIDS.
I breathed a sigh of relief when I read that. It means that I can quite possibly keep my system healthy enough, long enough, to be able to have that drug tested on me, maybe have it be on the market.
This is the man who may help save Stone's life. Dr. Donald Mosier developed the experiment with this mouse about a year ago.
All indications are that this is going to be a very powerful model for both studying how the AIDS virus causes the disease and also for asking what kind of agents can you use to prevent the disease.
In response to animal activists' insistence on using other methods to study the virus, like computer models or tissue cultures, Mosier says it still comes back to using animals.
The ultimate test of whether a theory, a drug works, is to take that into the whole animal.
Nearly 100,000 Americans have AIDS. Among them are many San Diegans. That's not good news, as more than half of those who contract the disease die. For people like Richard Stone, animal research is among their greatest hopes.
I have to agree with them about some domesticated animals, and I don't like to see them tested either and their lives wasted. I take a different look at the situation of mice, I think, particularly when it means my life.
Mosier balks at accusations of torture of animals by researchers.
To my knowledge, that happens very rarely, if at all.
Dr. Mosier, do you think human life is more important than animal life?
I think that the use of mice is absolutely appropriate, and that the human lives that we save are more important than the mice that we use in those experiments.
I look at the medical researchers as good guys. I absolutely do. I know a lot of people with AIDS who every day is just drudgery. They are almost looking forward to death so they don't have to worry anymore. Stuff I read about medical research is encouraging. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I can look forward to. I'll say, gosh, you know, I'll wake up tomorrow morning and maybe not a cure, but there'll be a better treatment. You know, so it's, yeah, very, very, very important in my mind. Absolutely.
Have you met any patients yet, even Dr. Breslau, have you met any patients yet that were ready to say this is it for me unless you can...
Yeah, even Dr. Breslau has, Marty. I'm going to invoke the fairness doctrine, which means I get to speak now.
Okay.
You showed us an aid on clicks. I'm sorry, you showed us a clip on AIDS. AIDS is exclusively a human disease. There are no end of AIDS volunteers who will make their bodies and their serum available for the necessary studies. Dr. Mosier has a self-fulfilling prophecy. Research on mice is good, therefore research on mice is good.
Can you help me understand something about just exactly this subject? I understood that an American firm had developed what it thought to be a vaccine with some potential, yet it is being tested on humans, but in Europe, not in this country. Does that ring a bell? I've been having trouble finding out and understanding
Marty,
why.
Marty, that same story resurfaces approximately every 3.5 weeks.
Oh, okay, so it's not... You're telling me it's not true?
Our nearest cousins on this planet are chimpanzees.
No, but I'm asking why it's not being tested in this country. Are you telling me that no such vaccine exists? Or is there something specific to our system?
No, there have been attempts to create a vaccine in human volunteers using AIDS-infected individuals. And a brave French researcher allowed himself to be infected in order to help the development of the vaccine.
So the story that I'm asking you about, you don't know about. I mean, I've been unable to find much information about it.
Marty, I don't think that's the point.
Marty, it's a simple matter. You've got chimpanzees and you want to give them AIDS because they don't get AIDS. So we go over there and we shoot their mothers and we drop the babies out of the trees and we go over there and bring them over and give them all AIDS. Now, do you really think there's any morality in that?
This is an animal
that doesn't get this disease. This is a disease that you got 75 or even 100,000 people out there, of whom 10,000 are in such desperate and sad and tragic shape that they would offer themselves tomorrow for any drug that had any hope.
Okay.
And I don't understand it, and neither do you.
Thanks.
And it's because we've been amoral for so damn long.
Okay. I do understand that we have to take a break, and when we come back, Steve, it's all yours. Okay, we're back live. We're going to go as quickly as we can with as many questions as we can, but Steve, you wanted to respond to the issue of AIDS. Why is the medical profession apparently trying to induce AIDS in animals that don't ordinarily get it, when, as Mr. Amory says, there may be enough human volunteers with the disease ready to step forward and become test subjects?
There are a lot of humans being involved in AIDS research. It's a very important part of that research, but it can't all be done there. The main comment I wanted to make was to correct the statement that Mr. Amory said, that we are shooting chimpanzees' mothers to bring their babies in here to do research on, because that's not happening. There has not been a chimpanzee imported into this country for use in research in 13 years, because it's been against the law and it has not been done. And to say that is doing
okay. Questions now. We're going to move as quickly as we can. We got a lot of ground to cover. All right, go ahead.
I'm Wayne Andrews, born and raised here in San Diego, and I'd like to ask the doctors these questions. Why don't we use human beings? There's many men on death row that I'm sure would volunteer for these processes.
Was there not a time when death row inmates, I'm thinking particularly back around the development of some of the vaccines and whatnot for tropical illnesses, why don't we use more human beings, or do we?
Well, we do use human beings, Marty. Volunteers who have incurable diseases. AIDS, for example, is a prime example. We use patients to try drugs, hopefully to see what effect it's going to have on them. We do it with patients with cancer. We have protocols that we use for some patients with cancer of the pancreas, cancer of the lungs, certain types of cancer. And we put some of those patients on certain drugs and others on different drugs to see what kind of results. So we are using people.
Okay, I'm Ted Drake, and I work at Mira Mesa High School. And I challenge any of the biology teachers to explain why they use dissections, because the only reason is to make it so when kids dissect the animals in high school, they don't care when they cut up live animals in college.
Is dissection of animals in high school part of an indoctrination? Go ahead, Sally. Go ahead.
I'd like to respond to that. A law was just passed last year, which
you don't have to.
Gives the students the right to refuse to dissect. And I think that we need to make more and more students aware of that law, and more administrators aware of their obligation to make an announcement in classes where dissection occurs that students have the right not to dissect, and that there are a number of alternatives available that give students a better education than does dissection, and do not desensitize them to the importance of having reverence for life.
Okay, come on over real quick. I'm having trouble walking over to you without getting in the picture.
Okay. My name is Viva Gonesbitt, and I'm a student at the School of Creative and Performing Arts. I have two questions towards the People for Animal Rights. Are you promoting vegetarianism? And if it came to saving a human life or an animal's life, how do you decide which is more important?
Well, I think that question is asked a lot. And I think the problem you come into is you're in an area of philosophy and religion. We are acting as if God is in our image, that because we're like God. We may not be, and I'm hoping when I get up there he's a cat, see?
Okay.
I have a question for Dr. Breslau. My name is Alan Chinello. I'm a board member of Stop Taking Our Pets. My question, Dr. Breslau, is What is wrong with selling our pets for research since they are going to die anyway?
We've answered that twice, Doc. Where have you been listening? The answer is you can't run a pound or a shelter if somebody out the back door is going to put the animal out to torture for 3 years.
It's a misstatement. I am using the same torture because it might be. In Dr. Zola's, there's never any torture.
It's just wonderful in his lab.
Okay. Go ahead. Just sit right there.
Yeah. No one has addressed the issue of psychological testing, that testing in animals in universities, going on and on, they're shocking the animals. Why can't they do it once and put it in books? Why the repetitiveness of the suffering of the animals? Why not once and end it?
Why so much repetition? Why is the mouse still running around the maze somewhere?
Yeah. Well, it speaks to an issue of the question of the use of animals in teaching as opposed to the use of animals in research. It's a different topic, and there are several attempts to try and reduce the use of animals in that sphere as well. That is, to use alternatives like videotapes, demonstrations, so that animals do not have to be used needlessly. That's the very same scenario that goes on in the research sphere. We use all attempts, all kinds of strategies that we can. Some require whole animals, some work satisfactorily with alternatives, some with humans, as that fellow was suggesting. We are attempting to use and develop the best models that we can. Let me just say, by the way, that the alternatives that people are pointing to all the time, like computer models and cell culture, tissue culture, those are not alternatives that were developed by animal rights activists. Those are alternatives that are developed by scientists in the course of science.
I have a question for Dr. Zola Morgan. My name is Lisa Landerson. I am a graduate student in biology, and I have been a visitor in your vivariums at UCSD. And while I know that vivisection, that animal research is not going to stop immediately, what I'd like to ask you is those of us who are concerned with animal welfare are concerned about the animals who are living there now. Is there some good faith effort that the medical community can make to do something to remedy these animals that are living with social depravity, with complete lack of mental stimulation?
I think you bring up a really good point. And the answer is yes, and we're trying to do just those things. But the paradox is that much of that involves animal research. We don't know what are the best things to be doing. We don't know what are the best things to be doing.
Wait, one at a time, and Sally's the one right now. Please.
That is ridiculous. For instance, the animals that Dr. Zola Morgan uses are highly social animals. They live in family groups. They have complex behavior patterns. When they are brought into his laboratory, and I'd like to make it very clear that Dr. Zola Morgan does use wild-caught cynomolgus monkeys. That means that for every single animal that is caught, you're looking at approximately 4 to 5 others that are shot and killed in order to procure that one animal. According to the World Wildlife Fund, 13 to 20 out of every 100 cynomolgus monkeys that are captured make it to the laboratory. You know, based on the statistics that we have seen from the project that Dr. Zola Morgan is working on, he will be responsible for the death of up to 924 cynomolgus monkeys, which are kept in isolation cages without environmental or social stimulus. And that is one of the downfalls of the Animal Welfare Act, because it does not address the environmental or social stimulus that is necessary to keep an animal healthy.
Okay. Wait, Mr. Amory. Dr. Zola Morgan,
and also, I have another
a response as brief as seems fair so we can move on?
Yes. Well, in our particular lab, we run studies that are involved with memory and learning. The animals are taken out of their cages every day. They're given a very large amount of social stimulation as well
from
as...
From whom?
As
from
as
humans.
Cognitive.
From Vinicenter.
Okay, let me ask a question.
Wait a minute. You said I got
Wait,
an answer.
Time.
You said I got an answer to what he said. I say if there's any, I can't think of anything in the world better than social stimulation from this guy.
Yes, my name is Beth Melaranya, and I'd like to go back to the question of ethics. I believe that animal research is ethically wrong, and I don't buy the argument that the ends justifies the means. And I'd like to ask these gentlemen if they can possibly believe that what they're doing is ethically sound.
I want to add on to that question. Is there not a fundamental basis to all of this that a value judgment is made that what we are doing to the animals is in our benefit?
Absolutely.
I think it's exactly right, Marty. It comes down to the value that we each have in regard to human life, in regard to animal life. Our feeling is that we have an obligation to the betterment of human life, to our children, to our friends and relatives. We believe that can be delivered at the same time as our obligation to the humane use of animals. We think those are not mutually exclusive as animal rights activists.
Okay, we're going to...
And the animals that are used in laboratories are killed when they're finished with the experiment.
All right. A break. We'll be right back. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Dr. Susan Sounds. I'm one of the three full-time lab animal veterinarians at UCSD. And I want to assure everyone here and the viewing public that the animals at UCSD receive not only humane care, but state-of-the-art care. I take exception.
I appreciate the statement, but you've already discovered that we're never going to reach consensus on it. But no, thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm in the laboratories every day, and this notion of torture is absolute nonsense. You are not in the lab every day, so you don't know.
Okay, let's let him respond. Okay, come on.
Stay cool.
Okay, go ahead.
Marty,
we've got to answer that. I'm out, gentlemen. Let's see if the question
is state of the art. You know why we're not in the laboratory every day?
Why?
Because no decent person could stand it.
Okay.
That's why.
I'm Tony DiMaggio, and I'm with Mercy Crusade, San Diego branch. I'm the director, and I did want to address this to Dr.
Very quickly.
All righty. Let's pretend for a moment, Dr. Morgan, Zola Morgan, that animals were not available for research. Would the world stop? Or would the researchers come up with another plan? Their jobs are at stake. Billions of dollars, tax dollars pay their salaries. Surely they would devise another plan for research.
Yeah, all of a sudden there are no animals. Can you do anything?
It would be catastrophic. There would be...
That's your position. I understand that. Let's go. You know, some of these are rhetorical in nature.
I would just like to ask Dr. Zola Morgan, how much, I understand his salary is kind of, I guess it's public information, and I understand his salary is approximately $90,000 a year. Is that not true?
That's not even close.
And is this like $40 million of grants? I would really like to know how much money is involved in this, because I think it has a lot to do with money.
Anybody know how money in total terms of total animal research projects all over the country? Is that what you're asking? Does anybody know the answer to that?
About $8 to $10 billion
are spent every
billion,
year.
Billion, would it be?
Billion with
okay, wait. Listen, we're a semi-civilized group here.
$47 million in NIH funds alone are poured into UCSD.
Go ahead, Steve. Let him answer. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to address that just a little bit. Every year in this country, $40 billion is spent treating people with Alzheimer's disease. $6 to $7 million is used to research for Alzheimer's disease. Once that research comes up with a cure, we won't be spending those $40 billion.
Okay, let me go to the telephone. Go ahead. Wait. Okay. Go ahead. On the telephone, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I would like to ask Dr. Zola Morgan. About two specific experiments that were conducted there. The sheep, the pregnant sheep, and the fetuses, I was wondering if that was humane and what the point of those experiments were. And also when the sea lions were drowned, was that humane? And what was the point of drowning sea lions?
I'm sorry, I don't know the details of the experiment, so I can't respond to that.
Hey, you reviewed the protocol, Dr. Morgan.
Wait, we're trying to come up with it.
Dr. Zola Morgan, aren't you the head of the Animal Subjects Committee? That's the first part of my question.
Yes.
Okay. Second of all, I have a number of questions really quickly. First of all, does Dr. Zola Morgan see any patients, any human patients? And
he's not an MD.
He's not an MD, so he's been working on the same experiment from my calculation since 1983. Is that correct?
1979.
You're a psychologist. Do you see patients as a psychologist?
We see patients in the research setting. It's not the same experiment at all. We are
primarily a researcher.
We are studying different brain areas involved in memory.
Okay, go ahead on the telephone while we get around here. You'll be next, I promise. Go ahead.
Do the animal activists feel that the use of a laboratory mice used in developing an antibody serum to perhaps cure me of my cancer, which I've had for over 10 years, do they feel that's justified to use something like that?
Doctor, is the use of mice to potentially develop some serum worthwhile?
The use of mice since 1971, when the NIH declared the war on cancer, has basically been a qualified failure. There have been no substantial increases in cures.
Okay, go ahead.
Phyllis Myers, and my question is for Dr. Breslow. I'd like to get back to the use of pets, our dogs and cats that come from the pounds. Are dogs and cats good research to use researches? Are they good for that?
Apparently Harvard University, MIT, Boston University, Tufts, the Beth Israel Medical Center, and New England Deaconess don't think so, because the strict laws in the state of Massachusetts prohibit the importation of any random source animals into that state. I don't think Dr. Zola Morgan, I'd like Dr. Zola Morgan to tell me what's special about UCSD that doesn't also apply to the institutions I mentioned.
Let him answer.
I think you can ask the 200,000 cardiac bypass patients who are surviving this year who would not be if it were not for those developments that were done in dogs and
puppies. Do I take it? Let me go down to this end of the panel. Do I take it that, I hate to ask hypotheticals, if the computer does it better, if the cell culture does it better, if there are other models that do it better,
we would be
you would halt your animal research.
Look, it's costly to use animals. It has its issues of humanity. We are all concerned about the use of animals. There are so many things that mitigate against using animals that the only reason we do use them is because we can't use these other possibilities at this time.
I'm Dr. John Walsh. I'm one of the physicians with the Trauma Center at UCSD Medical Center. I am involved in patient care. I am an MD, and I'm also involved in research. And I would just like to say that on a daily basis, techniques that we've learned in animal research are applied to critically injured trauma patients that saves their lives. And I would like to ask Sally Mack or anyone on the committee that, do they seriously expect the general viewing public to accept the notion that their critically injured relative is less important or more important than a laboratory mouse? I mean, is this what we're getting to?
Let Sally answer. Let Sally answer.
You know, I'll make it very brief. In the course of my animal career, I fought, as many people know, hunters. I fought the beaters of Dunda that we saw Lisa Landra stand up a minute ago. I fought some very difficult and powerful enemies. But never have I fought any one enemy that is as sure they're absolutely right as these highly overpaid, these duplicating, these cruel and rotten researchers.
Let me say that in the couple of months we have spent researching this and reporting this story, I have rarely seen a case where we have had two sides that both seem so sure. We'll have a break. Okay, we are unfortunately running out of time. Dr. Breslau, is there humane research or should it be no research on animals? Is there some humane research, worthwhile research? If there were more input, for example, say into Dr. Zola Morgan's committee, would you feel more comfortable, or should it all be abandoned? Very quick statement. I'm trying to get to as many people as I can.
I think the first thing to ensure that there is not inhumane reduplication of research all over the country is to have a national data bank that would examine every grant request
and
so is approved.
Okay. There is? You're going to tell me?
On the committee, there are members who are not members of the university, but who represent the community. We have three outside members. Some of them are members of humane societies around the county.
No research is really your position. None of this is warranted.
I'm saying that there are other ways to allocate our tax dollars which will benefit public health.
But that's not the same thing.
We don't kill animals to do that.
No, that's not the same thing. That's not the same thing. The question is, can we go where we're going as a nation in terms of science and research without the use of animals after tomorrow?
No, we can't go the way that we're going, and we shouldn't go the way we are going.
Marty,
we should be going in a different direction.
Go ahead, Mr. Amory, quickly.
You're not going anywhere. We got more chance of getting cancer than before these bums started.
Dr. Zola Morgan?
One more thing.
Very quickly.
You talk about the damn miracles of modern medicine. There isn't a baseball team out there that could play with the old-timers because they got housemaid's knee or something and they're out for a month.
Dr. Zola Morgan, if alternatives are worthwhile, let me ask this a different way. Would you take more input on your committee, or you're satisfied with the level it has now?
I think we would be, we can take more input. We have input from people who represent the animals in the community.
Okay. I'm out of, Sally, I'm afraid I'm out of time. Let me thank the panel, Dr. Roger Breslau for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, Sally Mackler, Sentinel Animal Advocates, Cleveland Amory from the Fund for Animals, Dr. Stuart Zola-Morgan from UCSD, Steve Carroll, the Executive Director of Incurably Ill for Animal Research, and Dr. William Rennert, who is the President-elect of San Diego County Medical Society. This is not an issue that is going to go away. The very fact that UCSD is participating in this program and others at the level that they now are is a reflection of the fact that they take all of this very seriously. We hope we have helped you understand it a little bit. For tonight, good night.